This is Dr. Skylar Madison Fontana, and you are listening to The Creative Writer's Way. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Robin Hutton, author of Sergeant Reckless, America's War Hero, and War Animals, the unsung heroes of World War II. Robin has also had an illustrious career here in Hollywood that spans back to her work with Tom Laughlin and his work as Billy Jack that spanned over 35 years. Welcome, Robin. Are you there?
Oh, Skylar. Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Robin, what amazing story you have. In addition to what I just shared, tell us a little bit about how you came to work in this field and what you're up to now.
Well, you know, Skylar, I've been so blessed over the years. When I think back on everything, when I started working for Tom Laughlin and his wife, Dolores, they were putting on a psychology conference called Panarion that were very popular in the 70s. And it would gather the greatest Jungian minds like Marie-Louise von Franz and Edward Ettinger and Robert Johnson. And then pair them up with, you know, Nobel Prize winners like Isaac Bashevis Singer and other great minds. And so when I got introduced to all of this work and then started working with Tom and Dolores on working with screenplays and everything else, it was just fascinating to see the role of the unconscious, how it plays. It is everything if you have your eyes open to see. And, you know, learning about the Tom and I co-wrote a book called The Nine Indispensable Ingredients that are in every hit TV show, movie, play, and novel. And it is just amazing when you start to look at these things, how you can use these ingredients in everything that you write. And I used it. I wrote a novel back in the 90s. And, you know, it's amazing how much easier the craft becomes when you just start formulating it, but you let your unconscious dictate how the ingredients are going to flow. But you know that you need your visible villain here, and your hero needs to do this, and, you know, we need to have the villain have his comeuppance, and, you know where you're going to craft these ingredients, but you let your unconscious dictate where it's going to go. So it's been a fun ride with the things that I have been writing. And recently my two books that I've had published on Sergeant Reckless and with the War Animals, those are nonfiction. They're basically biographies of these wonderful animals. But I learned so much about myself in doing the work with these great animal heroes, and just what I love about writing and how much I need to write and how much it means to me and everything. And so I've just been very, very blessed with so many things regarding this.
Well, I just wanted to say to you, two things you said just stuck out to me, that you learn about yourself through writing. That, to me, I think is understated in terms of really what the value and purpose all of this ultimately serves. In addition to the fact that when you couch something in a story and the messages that you can kind of put into the story without actually beating someone on the head with it, it actually is absorbed more by the recipient. For example, I got to tell you, I went and watched the Billy Jack, and the messages that they had are just as relevant today.
Yes, I mean, indeed. And that's why there's still so many people that are in their fan club. And, you know, up until the day Tom died in 2013, he was getting letters from people that saw the movie 40 years ago and would tell him how the movie changed their lives to that day, you know. And, man, what an ability to be able to have written something that affected so many people on such a level. And and it remained truthful to those, things that he crafted in the stories and stuff. It was really wonderful, wonderful to see. And when you can have a movie affect you or a book or anything like that affect you, so even years later, things become classics because they touch the emotions, they touch the unconscious of people, that they can watch it again and again and again because it hits something so deep in their soul that this is one way to tap it. And it's a phenomenal, it's a phenomenal thing to look at. I looked at some of my favorite movies like Field of Dreams or It's a Wonderful Life or, you know, things like that. And just to see what was being said. And you learn different things as time goes on. And so it's really quite fascinating.
Yeah. And we call that archetypal. And also, I mean, the imagination, the language of the imagination is emotion. And the critical, you know, thing here is that we touch emotions. And that's really what it's about.
That's how you learn everything. It's all about emotion. It is. And, you know, Tom always said, if you want to see, you know, what God is up to, you look to the result. Or if you want to see what gets you, what's really going on in yourself, whatever, if you get angry at somebody, I mean, really, really over the top angry. Now, you got to look and see, some of it might be justified, but it is the level of your anger that you have to look and see, where does this exist in me that I'm accusing that other person? How can I, you know, it's obviously triggered something inside of me that I have to get in touch with.
In psychology, we call that our shadow. And
yes, indeed.
You know, we are just energy in motion, which is emotions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Could you also, one thing I wanted to touch on is that you also said was the role of the unconscious in creating. I totally agree with you that you know, I'm the type of person where I like to have my story premise kind of, you know, who's the protagonist, what do they want, who's stopping them, and what are the stakes? You know, to me, that's like the skeleton. And then once I have something like that, and knowing these other elements, the indispensable elements or ingredients that you talked about, it helps to write and formulate the story. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
It triggers something in terms of the imagination, what I called it, as your co-partner in creating.
Absolutely.
You know,
well said. No, that's absolutely
really
right.
Thing.
And it can help unlock places where you're blocked. You know, I like to have, when I wrote my novel, I knew where my beginning was and I knew the ending. I knew where I wanted to take the story.
Excellent.
I had no idea really when I first did like the first draft, what was happening in from the beginning to the end until it came out.
Wow.
And then, and then after I had my first draft down, then to go back in and, you know, you let the unconscious write. And then the whole trick of being a writer, as you know, is to go back and rewrite. Writing is really rewriting, as we all know. You know? And so it's then crafting it. Once you have the juice down and see what the unconscious is trying to say to you, then you go back in and apply your skill. And it's magical how the process really comes together.
So what I found in doing my dissertation, which is kind of what I did it on, the creative process, I found that focus, it's the focus that gets the attention of the unconscious. For example, a lot of times with our dreams, it's, you know, it might be, you know, Freud said remains of the day, and sometimes it's what we're focused on that the unconscious listens to and then speaks to us. So you can know the beginning and the end, which is brilliant, and then if you're working on this daily and you're thinking about it, that's when inspiration sparks. That's how you activate the muse. As far as
absolutely. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I remember when I was working on my novel and stuff, and I'll never forget this moment because I was in my apartment on in West LA, and I'm overlooking all of, you know, the basin there, and I was writing about this one gal who started off really kind of flawed and an alcoholic and really troubled and a bad marriage. And when I gave her denouement at the end and saw where she came together because of love and how she changed, I jumped up out of my desk and I was like bouncing around my apartment because all of these people in our stories are really just reflections of our own unconscious. And that's why we can write about it. So when I saw how she developed through the course of the story, I was just elated and excited, and she became my favorite character, you know. And it's really fun to see where it takes you, you know.
The character arc is really critical. I
yes,
you know, the trials and tribulations serve a purpose, And that's really what we're looking for. So tell me about, didn't you say the other day we were talking that you woke up and you had the idea for a story? My husband had that this morning. All of a sudden, he woke up and he had the idea for a story. And I was like, how did you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, this is really funny. And I think I started to tell you the other day. My book on Sergeant Reckless, which is a biography of this great Korean War horse that served with the Marine Corps during the Korean War as an ammunition carrier. I discovered that story through a dream. And it's a fascinating thing because I had this dream of this old black horse being stuck in my high school bedroom closet. And this horse sticks his head out of my closet. And this is the dream. And I thought, what is this horse doing in my closet? And I looked, and he lived down in this cave that went way down below into like the walls of the house or something, you know. It was so bizarre. And the horse was sick, and it was weak, and it was dusty and old and, you know, just needed my help. And so I pulled this horse out of the closet, called for help, and I saved its life. That's the end of the dream.
Oh,
and
it
had been stuck in this closet for 8 years.
Oh, wow.
So naturally I'm thinking, okay, this is a very powerful dream, you know. So
yes.
I looked at the major associations of horse, 8 years, high school bedroom closet, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And it turned out that the horse, everything I was writing at the time had a horse in it. And I was working on a book at the time. It was a young adult novel about horse racing, and it was called Kentucky Bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having writer's block at the time of this dream.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I looked at the horse, and the horse ended up, when I was writing it out, I was writing all my associations down. I was doing like an act of imagination to all of the elements in the dream to see what was coming up, you know, inside of it.
Which you learned from those Jungians, right?
I mean, indeed! Oh, my God, I know.
All your exposure to Marie von Franz and Edward Edinger and Robert John. I mean, you are just so blessed. That's amazing.
I am so blessed, Skylar, seriously. And I know some people might think I'm a little loony bins at times, but they don't understand. You know, if I can get them to understand,
that's
what's so fun about meeting and learning about your work is I feel like we're such kindred spirits, you know, and it's so much fun when you can find somebody like that. The horse stood for my writing instinct. And because the high school bedroom closet, I had written a story in high school that I absolutely was so proud of. I wish I had a copy of it to even see what I said, but I remember being so proud of that story. And so everything I was writing had a horse in it. And so I looked at the 8 years, and it had been 8 years since I had lived in my new home, and I had never finished a writing project. I had started a lot of things.
Oh my!
I had finished my novel before I moved into my house. And so it turns out that the 8 years turns out that, you know, because my horse was weak and sick and needed my help, it was my writing instinct.
Your creative
was
instinct
sick
too.
And weak. Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
There you go.
That was all. And that was if I did not do something to save the horse, to save my writing instinct, it could die, you know. So I pulled the horse out of the closet and saved its life. So
I
went to work, and I thought, okay, this dream is a warning to me that I have to finish my writing projects. I have to do something.
Well, it's
so
a special message.
It is. So I did an act of imagination to the horse. I named him Smokey, and Smokey was one of my favorite movies back in the 60s with Fess Parker and everything, and, you know, Smokey the cow horse. So Smokey told me to go to my bookshelf and pull off any horse book, and it would give me inspiration. And because I had writer's block at the time. And so I went, and I had all these books, and I pulled off Chicken Soup for the Horse Lover's Soul. And in that book was a short story on Sergeant Reckless. And I thought, who's this horse, and why have I never heard about her?
Yeah. I just can't believe how amazing this is.
I know. It gets crazy, you know. So I, you know, I researched Sergeant Reckless. She had disappeared from the pages of history. The only four things came up on the internet. She was just nowhere to be found. So I thought, oh my gosh. So I started working on her story. And I remember I said the 8 years, it was a warning to me. But when my book on Sergeant Reckless finally got published, it was 8 years to within 3 days of when I had the dream. So the dream was not only a warning, it was a premonition that the horse was pulled out of the closet.
It's
just really fun, you know.
It
just gets crazy.
I'm just blown away. And, you know, if only we could remember more and interpret our dreams like that. What a gift that was. You know, what's the secret to that? I haven't figured that out yet, you know?
Well, I think that we remember the dreams when we're supposed to remember them. And, you know, you know, when the unconscious really needs us to learn something, boy, we won't forget that nightmare, you know? And but I think, you know, I heard that Jung didn't even dream the last years of his life because he was so in tune with his unconscious, it had nothing else to tell him for him to do that. So, you know, it's just ways of trying to, you know, figure out how to create a dialogue, you know, with ourselves to learn more about these pieces within our unconscious. Yeah, no, I keep a tape recorder by my bed because, in the dark of the night when you just kind of, you know, I don't want to get up and turn the light on and wake up and everything.
Yeah.
But if I wake up with some image that I need to think is very important, I'll just turn on my little tape recorder and, write, dictate into it. Then it's not going to hound me overnight because I have it down. And then I can roll back over and go to sleep. And then in the morning, you know, check it out and see what did I say in the middle of the night, you know.
That's brilliant. So. I love it. So I want to shift gears a little bit because the 9 indispensable ingredients in every hit film, TV show, play, and novel. And, of course, I saw your blog post on A Star Is Born. And I haven't seen the movie yet, but I read what you wrote. And I said to myself, she's right on. Would you mind sharing a little bit, just some of what you could summarize the indispensable ingredients in the book that you wrote and also, you know, what you wrote about A Star Is Born?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
No, not at all. Yeah, the ingredients are really, really cool. And, you know, they're basically, you know, 9 major ones that Tom and, you know, really wrote about and we kind of worked together on. And the first one is undeserved misfortune. An undeserved misfortune occurs when we, the audience, see something happen to a character on the screen that they do not deserve to have happen to them. And it creates like a fear and a pity for us.
Yeah,
and we can't wait to
Aristotle,
see what happens.
Empathy.
Fear
and pity.
Yeah. Empathy. Fear and pity and empathy, you know. And it's like, you know, some
Love
of the
it.
Classics are like you know, specifically like a Forrest Gump is easy to see this because, you know, boy, what that kid had to go through, you know, with the people just coming down on him all the time and just creating this fear for, you know, being bullied and everything.
Yeah.
And then, but to see him persevere is just amazing. So undeserved misfortune is really, really important.
Powerful.
And you see them, one of the archetypes of undeserved misfortune is like the abandoned child, you know, and that was what the power of like E.T., you know, when E.T. came and he was abandoned on Earth and, you know, we feared for what was going to happen to this little alien, you know, throughout the story, you know. So undeserved misfortune is really, really key. And we have to make sure that it's not deserved misfortune. It has to be undeserved.
Yeah.
Because if
totally
it's deserved misfortune, then it's
we don't
have that same kind of empathy or relationship
empathy.
To it.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another is curiosity through superior position and mystery. Now, superior position means that we know something's going to happen, or we see as the audience sees that something's going to happen to one of the characters on the screen, but they don't know what's going to happen. And so we won't
write
the theater until we see and know how is this going to come about?
Affect them.
You know,
and
how are these
yeah.
characters? Yes, how are these characters going to deal with this? And you know, mm-hmm. it can be a place like in Jaws. It was the ocean. You know, we knew that this shark was in there, but you know, mm-hmm. the people on the beach didn't know about that. Or
yes.
The movie Titanic. We knew that the ship was going to sink, but we really didn't know how all of these characters that we fell in love with were going to turn out. You know, that kind
yep.
of
how
thing.
How are they going to deal with it? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Jurassic Park. You know, it was the island.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And it creates all these questions and
right.
everything. You know, the movie It's a Wonderful Life, which is one of my all-time favorites, you know,
mm-hmm.
that has great
yeah.
superior position because, you know, we have Clarence the Angel coming in, helping George Bailey
mm-hmm.
see all of these things, you know, and it's just
yes.
An amazing thing. Now,
yes.
and curiosity in the form of mystery is, you know, these whodunits are always
mm-hmm.
fun to figure out, but you have
well,
to also make sure
turning the pages too.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
Turning the pages. What's going to happen?
That's
now.
Right.
Yeah,
it's exactly right. And like in A Star Is Born, we know that Jackson Maine is going to die because it's a remake, it's the fourth remake. So we know our
mm-hmm.
beloved hero is going to die. We just don't know
in
what way it's going to happen
to
see.
Having
yes,
the main character
I know.
Die kind of breaks the rules, but
it does, and it's interesting
yeah.
because he was a hero, and a hero is one of the
mm-hmm.
main. You know, we have to have a hero. We're gonna create a hero. The audience is gonna create a hero, whether we do it or not. You know, so they have to have
yes.
some place where their ego can identify with. And you know,
right.
Jackson Maine in A Star Is Born was a very flawed hero.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still a
mm-hmm.
hero because of his love for Allie, for, you know, for the
and
girl.
And the way he helped
and
her.
So,
and, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you could see in throughout the movie how all of that is key. So
mm-hmm.
the hero and the heroine is the third ingredient.
Element.
And that
yeah.
is, yeah, really, really important. And then there are rules, of course, with the hero that, you know, the hero can't be stupid. The hero has to have integrity, you know, and if
has
any of these rules kind of get,
yeah.
exactly. And you want them to be triumphant in the end. And
yeah.
the hero can't do something so stupid that we lose identity with them. And so
mm-hmm.
in A Star Is Born, you know, it's amazing how, you know, the hero of Jackson Maine is flawed, but we still go along with him, which says a lot about, I think, the writing and the direction that they took with this movie, which was
mm-hmm.
which was really
mm-hmm.
quite interesting. But the
mm-hmm.
fourth element, and this is the key one, is a visible villain we love to hate.
Yes.
You know, we need to have the hero be able to triumph over evil. And
the antagonist.
And this
yes.
Yes, yes, we need that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
the visible villain has to be one where we need to have satisfaction that he has a comeuppance at the end.
Mm-hmm.
We need
yeah.
to see the villain being taken down. There
right.
was this
mm-hmm.
TV show called Goliath that Billy Bob Thornton's in.
Mm-hmm.
And first season, it was
mm-hmm.
phenomenal because, boy, evil was coming at them, and, boy, the heroes survived at the end. Well, season
mm-hmm.
two, honest to God, Skylar, the villains won. It was
right.
like my brother and I looked at each other, and it was like, I will never watch
We're
the
like,
show
no.
again. It's
yeah.
so depressing.
It's almost
you know?
Like the psyche can't take it. It's like we can't.
It can't take it.
Because there is this theory that with stories, it's called narrative transport, that one of the things that psychologically works and exists between the reader or the you know the viewer, you know, whether the medium is TV or film,
right.
is that we do an as if. We step into the shoes
yes.
of the protagonist as if we are that person. And
exactly.
And that's what you
exactly.
want to create, the narrative transport. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
the
magic
interesting.
That makes the story work. Yeah.
That's right. And one of the key ingredients is credibility. And you can create anything you can set up, but you have to keep it creditable within the confines, and using mm-hmm. as if or what if as a key factor in trying to create this and saying, what would this character do? Mm-hmm. If I was this character, how would I react to this? You know,
so
what
believable.
If I yeah. did this? Mm-hmm. Yes, you have yeah. to be creditable. Mm-hmm. Because once yeah. you do mm-hmm. something, if you do something to violate the little cocoon that you've built, you're going to pull your audience out of being up there on Mars or spacecraft.
Take them out of the story.
Suddenly we're sitting yeah. We're sitting in the theater thinking, okay, pass me some more popcorn. Let's get through this,
yeah,
you know. That kind of thing.
I'm as if with this, and that doesn't feel right. Yeah. And this all goes on.
That's exactly right.
We're not thinking this while we're watching it. You know, it's just,
right.
we feel it. We understand it.
It just happens. It happens to us. It's like, too, it would be like if the actress never held a baby before and she's holding a baby in a way that every mother knows that, you know, this is just an actress holding a baby. You know, this is not a character really, you know, doing it correctly. And it pulls you out of that moment because you just know,
yeah.
like, okay, that wouldn't happen. That just wouldn't.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't happen.
And then do you agree that another important element in the ingredients is this thing that we call in depth psychology, the character arc, the growth in the character as a result
oh, absolutely.
Of the trials and tribulations. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really important.
And how the hero goes from point A to point Z, and the growth mm-hmm. is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to see that to understand what the, you know, because he's carrying your psyche with him. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we as an audience need to feel that growth. And that's what makes us want to go back to a movie again and again is when we enjoy the ride, when we've learned something,
mm-hmm.
when we kind of can follow these unconsciously, of course, but, you know, we
mm-hmm.
we
yes.
can follow all this along. And
I know.
It's just
I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
It truly is.
But
so then the fifth, one of the fifth element would be Jeopardy and the Sword of Damocles. And these are also kind of ties into Undeserved Misfortune and Curiosity too. But Jeopardy is putting, you know, one of the characters in danger that something
mm-hmm.
will happen. So then the Jeopardy creates the undeserved misfortune. And so
mm-hmm.
it just intensifies.
So this is
the
conflict and suspense type of thing, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't, it's a threat that undeserved misfortune
mm-hmm.
is going to occur right before
exactly.
our eyes. And so, you know, people are in danger of something happening, and we won't leave until we see how that's resolved everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah. And the
yeah.
Sword of Damocles is visibly holding over something, over somebody, you know, where we see the threat of some kind is just,
yeah.
yeah, visible over it. And you know, we just can't wait to see, you know, Titanic was one
yeah.
big sort of Damocles,
yeah.
you know, because we
yeah.
knew that this ship was going to sink, you know.
It was one of the highest
yeah.
grossing films ever. Yeah.
It was the highest grossing. When we wrote this, it was the highest grossing film of all time back, you know,
yeah.
15, 20 years when
almost.
This was written.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
it's got to be up there on the top. And I had a little bit of a problem with the film because I didn't really see Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet together was it Kate Winslet? Not Kate Winslet. Yeah, it was Kate Winslet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought he was too young for her, but that was just me, you know. But
yeah, I see what you're saying.
Little
immature, but that was part of the attraction,
right.
maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
As opposed to
yeah.
the guy
I thought she was
hooked up with. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but anyway, what a great that was just a beautifully done film. The sixth ingredient is conflict and clash of wills. And you know how
mm-hmm.
human nature loves a fight, and, you know, we just love this clash of wills and seeing who is going to win, and that creates the hero and the villain, you know, and
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
try to see where the conflict is going to come, and it really does evoke the emotions, and it
yeah.
also evokes our intellect, and curiosity to see where all of this is going to end up and what it's going to, you
but
know, where it's going to take us. And a star of, indeed. And a Star Is Born, there was a lot of conflict and clash of wills as Allie's career started to take off. And she went from being this, you know, great musician singing these wonderful, soulful songs to becoming a pop diva who, where the lyrics really don't mean anything. And it was just mainly going up there and everything was changing with her. And so there was a big conflict in there and a clash of wills with the manager, you know, between
the
manager and the husband as to, you know, geez, what are you doing to her and stuff. So it was really
brilliant.
Interesting. Yeah. So the seventh one would be credibility. And we talked about credibility, you know, it's as if, you know. Yeah, absolutely. And you have to keep things creditable. Otherwise, we're just not going to be identified with the situation. And it's, you know, you just have to really be mindful of all of these things. And the next one would be humor. Because that's a key one. Now, you can't really, sometimes you can't, you want to have humor, but it can't be forced, you know. And people need, especially if you have an intense movie, people need a release and a relief.
Exactly.
And they're going to
that's
find some place to laugh, even if it's not a moment. I don't. Did you see the movie War Horse by chance?
Yes.
Spielberg's film. Well, there was it was such an intense movie with these horses during war, and it was not a laughing matter at any any point. But it was just so incredibly intense, and you know, for me, it was just too intense of a film. I had problems with it, but
the humor breaks up the tension a little bit. You know, it's wouldn't you say the humor breaks up the tension?
Yes,
otherwise
it does.
It becomes
you have to. You have to have it. And in the theater that I saw the movie in, you know, this horse just got tangled up in barbed wire. And that is not a laughing. But when the guy asked, you know, does anybody have a, you know, a wire cutter? You know, a dozen wire cutters come flying over into the barbed wire, you know, to help. And the audience just howled. Overlap because they needed that moment, you know, of just, oh my God, you know, and I'm looking around thinking, okay, this is not funny, you know, but it was sense that, okay, that was a cute moment, but they,
you
need to have that kind of release and relief, you know,
tension.
And
release.
Then when the German and then when the German corrected the Englishman on his English, you know, that was a cute one. That was funny. But
that was another one. You're great with these examples of everything. This is great.
Oh, thanks. And then the last one after humor is a love story. And love story is just is just critical. You the love story, if you look at all the great movies, the top the top blockbusters, you know, and the classics, they're all a love story of some kind. And you really,
of that
you know, and A Star Is Born was a really key thing in there. For me, you know, it's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back, you know, or the ultimate is, you know, boy sacrifices his life for the girl. And the same with, you know, if a girl does the same with a guy. But in Billy Jack, it was the classic ending where, you know, he sacrificed everything out of and, you know, went to jail, which was horrible for him. But he sacrificed it all so his beloved Jean and the school with these kids could go on for years. And so it was just
but you
iconic.
Had this sense that, you know, he wanted to also have a trial and he wanted it publicized so the word would get out there. And, you know, we also had potential for a success, something that a sequel to this. That we
something bigger would happen. Yes, something bigger would happen for him.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing about learning about, you know, the racism and overcoming all of this, it was bigger than him. And so In A Star Is Born, you know, we saw the love story between these two people, and ultimately at the end, you know, he kills himself because he's, you know, convinced she's better off without him. But you know, which is tragic. It's just a tragic thing. And what I wrote about, what really bothered me, because I fell in love, of course the music was so fabulous, and that carried your emotions. It really, because it was just such a great emotional movie. The music helped, you know, it just triggered the emotions a lot too. And
interesting.
Especially, I found myself just, I mean, I went back a second time to see this film just because I had to figure out what was going on inside of me that this triggered.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go
tonight. And so I could write.
Yes.
So you really have to, because we know how it's going to end and stuff. But I needed the villain to have his comeuppance. And, you know,
that.
The villain was her
so
manager.
Right.
And yeah, and when you see it now, you'll see what I'm, you know, what I'm talking about with, you know, it could have been if they tweaked it just ever so slightly and had this villain have his comeuppance, we would have just understood. And then, because now as it stands, in my opinion, it's like the manager gets away with murder because, you know, after the conversation, it's
we don't
he kills himself thinking she'd be better off.
Yeah. Exactly.
And
it's
so
actually,
he didn't suffer at all.
I researched it, and it's loosely based on something that was written years ago called What Price Hollywood, which was interesting.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? I know. I got to see that. I've never seen that one. I really have to see what
book.
That is about.
I think it was originally a book, and then they adapted it, but loosely based on it, if you look, you know, you know, in terms of the history of the story. So, this is fabulous. I would love to hear. Why don't you tell us how we can, you know, see more of you, and you know, how can people reach you, and where is your platform, basically?
Absolutely.
Point.
I just am redoing my professional website. You can go to robinhutton.com or .org.
Okay.
And I have my blogs on there now that I'm just starting to write because I realized, you know, with my second book coming out and. You know, I went through, after that one hit in September, it was so funny, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Skylar, after you finish writing. You go through a little postpartum depression, you know, because get so focused, you know, on and having these characters or everything, you know, that you're working with on a daily basis, and some, you know, at one point they're done, you know, and so I just thought, man, why am I just... Yeah, why am I down? Why, you know, my book's coming out, and it was because I wasn't writing every day, or I wasn't involved in that. So, I've started
totally
a blog.
Agree with you. Nobody talks about that, Robin.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting?
When you finish it, yes,
I know.
It makes so much sense.
Really, it's crazy, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, well, what else can
really
I do?
Good point.
You know, I love it. It's just silly, you know. But it took a while for me to work it out. And it was, you know, I was going through this when I first saw the movie. And then after I saw the movie, I started to come out with it because I started working on, okay, why is this movie having such an emotional thing on me? Why do I feel compelled to see it a second time? Because I never go to a movie twice, usually, you know,
exactly.
except
yeah.
on certain ones like Field of Dreams or things like that. But I did, and so, you know, I really started. And when I figured out a different ending for the story, I felt a lot better.
Got it.
But, you know, because it was a way I could settle with why he did what he did at the end. You know, once I knew in my mind that I gave that villain his comeuppance, you know. But I think it would be a much more satisfying, you know, for the audience if that indeed had happened and stuff. But they can go to robinhutton.org, or I also have waranimals.com to learn more about my book and to learn about these wonderful World War II animals that I wrote about, and a new museum I'm trying to put together to honor these animals that I hope to build in Washington, D.C., which will be really cool. And then I have a website for sergeantreckless.com, too, to learn all about Sergeant Reckless and stuff.
Fabulous.
But if you go to my website at robinhutt.org, you'll be able to find links to both of the other things as well. So it's fun. It's really a lot of fun.
So this has been an amazing talk. I just think you're brilliant. And there's still so much more we can talk about. We may do another one just on Jungians, because I got to hear that. John Franz and all these people that had and knew.
So blessed. Yeah, I know. So blessed to have spent 15 years of analysis with her. You know, it was amazing.
God.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Thank you, Skylar. Thank you.
With us. I'm just in awe. And I think that we're very lucky. I never lose sight of the fact of how fortunate we are to even be able to think about things like this.
Right.
Do that.
Right.
I mean,
I know.
What?
it makes it fun when you can try to be as creative as you can be and knowing that you're developing yourself in the process. And that's what
exactly
keeps it kind of alive. You know?
And that's brilliant. And a beautiful way to end this. Thank you so much for
thank you, Skylar,
agreeing to do this and sharing your stories. Thank you again.
God bless. Take
Thanks,
care. Skylar. Bye-bye.
Thank you.